chance that a study could come out in the future that says absolutely unequivocally that there is an advantage or whatever here. And, you know, I just think that, and this is really just me kind of personally weighing in here, that like everyone needs to try to exercise like patience and empathy throughout this process, because like we're talking about real people here.
Welcome back to another episode of Approachable. My name is Joe Henderson.
And I'm Paige Pierce. And today we have the privilege of speaking with a PJ employee. His name's Danny Voss. He's the director of marketing. But we're not just going to get into the marketing. We have so many questions that we want to ask someone from the PDJ, like, you know, the transgender topic and all that stuff that just came out from them. We also want to talk about the disciplinary committee and, you know, what goes into decision making in those things and so many more things. Joe, what do you think this episode has in store?
Oh my gosh. If you are listening right now, you have to listen to the end of this episode. You will learn a lot about the PDJA just in general. And yeah, Paige, I just think we should just jump on and get into it. What do you think? Let's bring Danny on. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. We have on Danny Voss, Director of Marketing at the PDGA. Hey, Danny.
Hey, folks. How you all doing?
We're doing good. I have so many questions for you. I think this is the episode I'm the most excited about. And I guess to start it off, like, what is your day-to-day look like in the office?
Basically, if you want to kind of sum it up really simply, anything that kind of has, like, external communication from the PDGA, I'll be involved with, or my team will be involved with in one way or the other. So like social media is kind of a big one, and that's pretty obvious. Email and the newsletter, that type of communication, that's something that we do fairly regularly. The very recent PDGA rebrand, that was all done in-house within my department. And then myself and the other members of my team will also jump in with other departments to maybe help proofread or edit or just magnify a message that they want to get out there. My department also contracts media for non-MPO, FPO divisions. And I think we'll probably end up talking about that a little bit later. So yeah, just kind of like anything that you might think is related to marketing and media, we have a little bit of a touch on at least. Yeah, that's kind of like the big picture sort of a thing.
Wow.
Cool.
You kind of cover like a ton of different things. Like,
yeah,
like so much overlap. How did you get even involved with the PDJ?
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So I've been a member since 2010, PDJ number 45698. Yeah. I mean, I just started playing the game, you know, got involved locally, like here and there. I found out about this opening for the director of marketing a while ago and kind of had some conversations and some interview process and everything like that. Kind of to make a long story short, 2 years ago, my boss now, Joe Chargaloff, he's the executive director. He comes to me and says, hey, so now's the time. Disc golf is booming. Are you interested in joining the team? And I said,
wow.
Yeah. So I quit my job, which I had a pretty good job beforehand in the construction industry doing marketing for general contractor. And it was great. But I talked to my wife about it and she was like, you'll regret it if you don't
like
take a chance.
She knew the passion.
Yeah. So, I mean, Terry Miller tells the story that, you know, the disc golf guy, like that's how he was referred to. Like, you know, we all have that story. Like, oh yeah, that's like the disc golf person, like in your circles or whatever. Yeah. So obviously I had that kind of going on. And so Julia, my wife, was like, just do it. Worst case scenario, you fail and everybody hates you. And then
worst case,
you just go back to marketing construction. They'll probably take you back. But so far, almost 2 years in and things are going pretty well, I'd say. You know, certainly plenty of ebbs and flows, ups and downs and that sort of thing. But overall, it's been great. So,
yeah, that happens with a company or sport, really, that's like booming and trying to, you know, take that next step up. And a lot of people have been talking a lot about how the PDJ has in the last, I would say maybe 2 years, definitely last year, but I would say almost 2 years that you guys, yes, you just did the rebrand, you got all of that going, but also on the marketing side, as a fan of the DGPT and all the media companies, we've been seeing new commercials also that the PDJ have been making and putting out. And I wonder, for your position specifically, do you ever think about putting those commercials that we see on DGN onto like national television? Because I see the marketing, and I respect and appreciate the marketing you guys do in the game, but I wonder what you guys are doing outside of the core members, you know, those people that you're just talking about, like the people that call you the disc golf guy. How are you marketing to those people?
Right. Yeah, that's a really, really good question. And so in January, my team came together, the marketing and media team came together, and we just sort of had like a team summit, the six of us. And one of the themes that I brought up was like, hey, disc golf, the PDGA included, but like disc golf in general does a really good job of marketing to disc golfers, which is great. You know, like it's important to do that, but kind of breaking out into what we're all calling that non-endemic market is really like kind of a big next step forward. So our partners with DGN and the Pro Tour are invaluable in that respect, because they're the ones that are out there soliciting coverage and stuff like that to like ESPN, right? So when they had their broadcast Pro Tour Championship, I think, or it was really more of like a retrospective. Yeah, and it was like a retrospective on like the season, really, or like the back half of the season. Yeah, it was cool. And it was an opportunity to at least put disc golf on a platform that's, you know, more visible than what, you know, our internal mechanisms are, right? And, you know, so Sean Jack calls me and he says he works for the Pro Tour and he sets up a lot of advertising and partnerships and things like that. He's like, hey, does the PDGA want to get a commercial in this ESPN broadcast? And I said, oh yeah, big time. Let's do it.
Wow.
And we have a lot of that in the can. So we use that. So kind of like to better answer your question, Paige, is like, that's kind of a step in that direction. But part of my summit with my team was also recognizing that we can do more than just put a commercial in disc golf coverage produced by our partners, whether it's on DGN or ESPN or whatever. There are other channels that we should explore. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I'm actively doing right now. I have a really interesting opportunity on the table right now that I don't really want to like spill the beans on just yet, but I'm really hoping I can make it happen either for Champions Cup or US Women's or both. And so that'll be fun. It'll just be something that is different and reaching a broader audience than our current like disc golf, you know, bubble. And we'll just see kind of how it rolls. And I think a lot of us are still trying to figure out exactly how to make our niche grow and become less of like a smaller target and like a broader net that we're, you know, casting out into like, you know, normal people, not just disc golfers.
Right, totally. And I think that's the biggest thing that would help disc golf grow is to not focus so much on marketing inside the sport and focus on it outside the sport. Like I was actually even talking to the DGPT a little bit a few months back and seeing if they had any thoughts about making flyers, like physical flyers, and, you know, for the grounds crew that gets there the week before or 2 weeks before, go into coffee shops and little cafes and put out flyers. So like people that may have heard of disc golf but didn't know there was tournaments, or maybe have never heard of disc golf, are like looking for something to do next weekend. They see that, and, you know, instead of sending it to your newsletter where those people already are active, I think personally that that's the biggest thing that I'm curious about, because I think that's how we combined worlds and bring new people in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely. And I think a big thing that we can leverage is like an influencer market, more or less. So whether that's people like Bert Kreischer, who, you know, Paige, or, you know, maybe other YouTube channels or something like that, you know, those are opportunities that are kind of like right in front of us. And I think that is an easy way to make a big impact. You know, Andrew Zimmern, that's another great example of like somebody who's like right there and just kind of leveraging their channels for kind of a dual purpose, I think is something that everybody is recognizing right now is like, this is a good step forward. And kind of to your point, Paige, there's another example of you mentioned the flyers. There are these like electronic billboards that are getting installed all over the place, but they're like pedestrian level. Okay. And I've seen one in Augusta in real life, and there's one not far from Maple Hill, but they're just not like everywhere yet. But it's the type of thing where it's easy to do because, you know, we don't have to actually print collateral. We can just deliver a black and white image that basically gets displayed. But,
yeah,
you know, it's about the size of like a bus stop poster, if you can visualize
cool.
that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
you just walk. Yeah. So that's the type of thing. So like in Augusta, for instance, it could say, hey, Champions Cup is just down the road in 2 weeks. You know,
right.
Come and see then, like, or volunteer or whatever.
They could like put yeah, up exactly. a QR code and then click it and see what it's all about. Oh, I love that.
Totally.
Yeah, get tickets here. Yeah, because when we drive into Winthrop for USDGC or Throw Pink, there's a big thing on the side of the road, like something that would say, you know, like road work ahead, but it says USDGC Disc Golf Championship. And
yeah.
that's really cool and exciting. And then also when you drive into Emporia, there's those giant billboards. So like, I want to get a little bit deeper and see, like, are you allowed to divulge the PDJ's marketing budget and like where kind of like allocate where that is allocated towards like billboards? Is that even a thought that you guys have?
Right. So without like straight up just saying what the budget is, because that's something that we do work with the executive director on. So like throughout the year, he kind of like gives me a framework and then I go from there. I'll put it this way, with any sort of initiative that we want to launch, if we have a compelling argument for why this is important or impactful or beneficial or whatever, it usually gets greenlit. So the Holy Shot documentary that we did last year, that was maybe kind of like a special project. You know, we do put a fair amount of marketing dollars into that non-MPO FPO coverage, and that's something that we're trying to ramp up to as like a member benefit. So, you know, like getting juniors covered at Junior Worlds or US Women's mm-hmm. or that kind of thing, just to kind of like show those divisions that don't get that spotlight a little bit more love. And we think that's really important, particularly on the junior side, but for the Masters and AMs as well. But yeah, I mean, like, is something like a billboard doable? Like, absolutely. And like I was saying, that's kind of where we're looking right now, is what is that space that exists out of our normal MO, and just kind of test some of those things. And it'll be a ramp up, you know, let's start small and kind of test a couple of different things, see what's really working best, and then maybe push that a little bit more, the things that are, you know, yielding some success, and go from there. So and I'm happy to like brainstorm and hear like creative ideas and stuff like that. I love that kind of stuff. Maybe offline, if you want to give me anything so that not everybody gets all the secrets, I'm happy to like leverage your input and your perspective for sure.
Yeah, I appreciate it, and I can tell that's genuine. Like, I can feel how excited you are for this position. And for me as a member of the PDJ, that is something I'm super thankful for, that you're like this excited to do your job. But yeah, I would love to give you ideas like that. I think, like I said, I can't stress enough how much I think that that is important. So I would love to like have a further conversation about that. But yeah, like I think about like commercials in general, you know, like, yes, you see, I don't know, Joe, what's something you've been watching lately, like on television?
Oh my gosh. On television or on Netflix?
Yeah, television.
Okay. Oh man, on television.
Well, it doesn't matter. I think it's going to work.
Okay. Well, on Netflix, I've been watching the new golf documentary. What
okay.
is that called again?
Okay. Yeah,
yeah, Full Swing. Yeah, that one, Full Swing. Oh
yeah,
my gosh.
Yeah, I haven't started it yet, but
so
I'm excited.
Good. Yeah.
But so, okay, so you're thinking golf, right? And you're watching golf. And not every commercial you would see, even though it's a golf program being broadcast, not every commercial that you see is purely golf. Like, you'll see a right. Doritos thing, you'll see a whatever. So I just wonder if like we could reach out to the Cornhole League and be like, hey, well, let's buy a commercial slot here,
or you pickleball know.
Like pickleball,
I mean, the two of those, I mean, are hand in hand,
anything, you know. Yeah. Right. And like, I guess it leads me to another question, like when you see the Pro Tour Championship presented by Johnsonville or Barbasol or
right.
LL Bean and stuff like that. Those are new companies to come into disc golf recently. And I wonder if that's something where you and your team is reaching out to companies like that, trying to get them into it too. Is that part of what your job is as well?
Yeah, definitely. And my approach to a lot of that, hey, what are my partners doing and how can I amplify what they're doing by adding the leverage of like the PDGA behind it?
Right.
So like, for example, at this recent disc golf industry conference, or just kind of like in general, working with local organizing committees for majors or conversations with the Pro Tour or whatever, a lot of times I say, hey, what are you doing? And like, how can the PDGA help? So like, let's say a local organizing committee is trying to solicit a title sponsorship. Now, for the events that I would be most closely tied into, you know, AM Worlds or Tim Selinski, US Masters, that type of thing, it's probably going to be a disc golf company, but the point is still the same. It's like, hey, let me give you some assets that I have, you know, some control over to sweeten the deal a little bit and like enable you to make this bigger impact. And then from there, we together are building leads and we're kind of incrementally ramping up. And by creating success stories and testimonials with those non-endemic partners, we're making it easier for the next partner to like look at what's been done and say, okay, that could be us. Mm. You know what I mean? So totally. when the Pro Tour has a partner like Barbasol, right? And if we can go to them and say, hey, how was that? Was this a good experience? Did you get a good ROI? Whatever. And they say, yeah, well, then we can take that and go to, you know, the next person and say, all right, well, here are some success stories. This could be you. And so we have some of those going on right now. But like I mentioned, US Masters, there's this Go Low. They're like a weight loss company, you know, and they have like a line of products and like a lifestyle thing that they promote to get you in shape or whatever. And mm-hmm. it is kind of geared more towards that master's market. So they're starting small and they're ramping up right along with us. And, you know, it's better to just promise small, deliver big, and yeah. then kind of take that next step together. And that's kind of where we are right now in this market, I think. Yeah, we're just working as a team. And the other good thing about this industry too, I will say, is that partners are pretty open to collaboration, which I think at this point in like where disc golf's development is on the global stage is really, really important. You know, if I talk to, again, like Sean Jack, and I say, hey, is there some way that we can sort of commingle like the ad buy space that we control? He's like, yeah, you know, it's not adversarial, because it's like, okay, we can share a bigger piece of the pie that way. And it's absolutely. Just a lot of it is working that way right now. And when you talk to a lot of people in the industry, that's kind of the way it is right now. So we ought to take advantage of it before it gets so big and then it does get more traditional business style. So yeah, anyways, that's kind of where we are right now.
Are there any volunteer positions alongside of those paid positions that you were talking about for like the marketing side of things? Or is it just this six people that you have on your team?
I don't oversee any volunteers for media and marketing, you know, unless you consider in the instance of like those LOCs that are, you know, soliciting partnerships for their major and then providing some assistance there. I mean, you could maybe kind of say that, but really it's more like, you know, a tournament director is coordinating the entire thing underground where they are. Right. And they might have like a partnerships mm-hmm. coordinator or something, but I'm more like just coordinating with the TD, and then the TD is right. figuring stuff out on the ground. So
that makes sense. Then what do these six people on your team, like what are each of those positions like? Because we're on this podcast, we like to talk about like the jobs within disc golf, basically. So do you have any insight on that?
Okay, well, this is my favorite thing to do, and it's flex how cool my team is and how they are. So start with me real quick. I'm the director of marketing, so a lot of it is just kind of overseeing a lot of what the five people on my team do, and some obviously like some direct work that I was kind of explaining earlier. So I'll kind of go in order of how long they've been at the PDGA the interest of being fair. Matt Rothstein, he's the media manager, and what he does is contracts are partners for that, again, that non-MPO, FPO coverage. He helps write and produce a lot of our commercials. So the one that was on ESPN, for instance, he worked with a producer to help come up with that and sort of gave the direction there. And he has other projects too. So he worked on the Holy Shot documentary and other kind of like video centric stuff. That's his niche there. Hayden Henry, he's our communications manager. He does 90% of our social media. He composes our newsletters. He's the one that's on the ground more often than not at the Pro Tour and majors. He's probably the guy doing the interviews after people come off their rounds at the Pro Tour and stuff like that. And we work with the Pro Tour there to get that figured out. Jenny Wigan, she is our digital marketing specialist. She is a rock star because she deals with a lot of random stuff from everybody, not just people on my team. She came on board to really make sure the website is working. So anything that gets posted to the website, she has probably had a hand in, whether it's an article or the board minutes, or right now we're also going through a website refresh. So she's helping guide the direction of that, like UI, UX, the redesign of that and that kind of thing, along with the technology team. She isn't doing that completely solo. Grant Zellner, he is our brand manager. So he had a big hand, obviously, in the rebrand that we just went through. He's the host of PDGA Radio. He is also on the ground a bit doing interviews and things like that at Pro Tour events and majors. But this year, he's also going to do more like fan and attendee engagement stuff, cool, including like selling that merch. So we had a really good experience a few times this year, like at Worlds and USDGC, where we had just like a booth and we just got to talk to people. And I mean, not that selling memberships is really like the big purpose of going there, but we converted a lot of people into members just by talking to them about the PDGA and maybe demystifying the PDGA a little bit. And so that was good. Again, that's not really our primary focus there, but it doesn't hurt to, you know, make a little money. And then the most recent member of the team, Caitlin Sapone, graphic design specialist, she is the one that really did the rebrand. Like, she drew the new logo. She was not a PDGA member when she was hired. She was like a casual disc golfer, which I feel like now I can say was like kind of a motivating factor in bringing her on board to get a little bit of that, you know, quote unquote outsider perspective. So she's building new brand standards. She works with the LOCs that run the majors to like make sure that their branding looks good and that kind of thing. When we do design a billboard page, she'll be the one doing that kind of thing. So
that's cool.
Yeah. So that's my team. There's a lot that goes on here with us, but we have good people doing the work. And everyone at the PDGA cares a lot about disc golf. And that is for sure true with everyone on my team. Like, we all really, really care. And just like you said earlier, Paige, how excited I might appear to be right now. That rings true for everyone else.
That's awesome. And it's cool that you know, you're so proud of them, and you are, you know, you seem like you have different positions and for each different thing, which is, I think, is great. So people don't get overworked and, you know, or overtasked, and they're not necessarily qualified for a certain thing. I wonder, does every department kind of have that same thing? I know you said you have five on your team, so six including you, but do you know how many total PDGA staff members there are, and then also how many volunteers? Because we know that the PDGA is made up of a lot of volunteers as well, like on the committees and stuff like that.
We did a count as about 35 full-time employees, and then PDGA Europe is kind of like a almost sort of like another company organization type of thing, but they have two full-time employees in Europe as well, along with a like separate board of directors for PDGA Europe.
And then, do you have a tally on the volunteers? Do you, or a guess?
So it depends on how you would want to break it out. Like, the closest volunteers to the PDGA would probably be the committee members, like you mentioned. I didn't go through and tally that up. You can go search, you know, Google PDGA committees, and then they're all listed there. All the members of those committees.
Oh, okay. Some of them are secret though, right?
Yeah, the disciplinary committee, only the chair is visible there.
Okay.
But for all the other committees, you can see who sits on the committee, and then you can kind of tally it up from there. If I had to guess, that's probably 50 or so. And then from there, then it would go to like the state, provincial, and country coordinators would probably be the next closest volunteers to the PDGA. And then if you count tournament directors, you're getting into the thousands.
I guess I meant more the committees. I'm really curious, like, because I know all of the committees are volunteer based, and that's cool. I think we should put the link down at the bottom of this episode for people to be able to see who's on the committees and what committees there are. Does it also say that, like the titles of the committees and their goal, maybe?
No, like now you're giving me these good ideas. So I like that.
As a PDGA member, that's kind of what our money's going toward in a small capacity, I would assume. So it would be cool to know like what committees are out there and what their missions are.
Right. So I'm looking at the page right now, and there are 13 committees or working groups. Technical standards is a working group. It's not really a committee. I think the distinction there is that it's maybe a little less structured how often they need to meet and stuff like that.
Okay.
Or it's just not like officially propped up by the board. The other working group looks like the course design. And then I know diversity and outreach, I think, is actually transitioning to becoming a committee where it used to be a task force. Nomenclature aside, we're really splitting hairs by getting into all that stuff, but let's just say 13.
Okay. So I guess the real reason I'm asking is because when we find out there's 50 estimated 50 members, I wonder if it would be a benefit to paying them so that they do have a little bit more incentive to do things quicker and to get action items done quicker. When you're a volunteer, you're a little bit less, you know, motivated to set up a call with all of your committee members. But when it's your paid job, you're like, okay,
sure,
let's get this done. And so I wonder, a couple questions ago, you got excited too about getting new members. And I wonder if as we get new members, we are getting more money into the PDGA's budget. Is that a thought of like, hey, let's get more employees? And I know the media and the marketing is growing, like seeing all the new people, Grant and Hayden and all those people. Obviously, the PDGA is trying to get new staff members, but I'm wondering if they're also thinking about making those committee members, basically upgrading them from volunteer to staff.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's a good point. This is something that's outside of the purview of my position to like really, you know, make a statement on, or certainly a promise. But do I think that there could be space for maybe at least the chair of that committee to have some sort of stipend or something like that? I mean, yeah, sure. I mean, I could definitely see that being motivation for sure. I think also getting those committees, I think a lot of them are fairly motivated, and a lot of them are finding that their committee is becoming more and more impactful as membership grows because of like the initiatives that they might leverage to that can impact the membership. And now they're seeing that more and more. So like, you know, 5-6 years ago, a committee might make something happen that maybe it didn't have that impact because the PDGA staff wasn't like big enough to help prop it up. Whereas now, because there's more paid staff, so like me and my team and the other folks, we can help maybe promote that. So like, for example, Women's Global event was propped up in 2012 when the PDGA staff was like 10 people, maybe. It might have been less. But I think because of the motivation of the Women's Committee when that initiative was launched and the immediate impact that that program had, it flourished, right? Like that idea was gonna take off no matter what, right? And it definitely has. But now we'll use the Women's Committee as another example. You may have seen that we made an announcement about Women's Week, which is really gonna be like 9 or 10 days, so like Women's Week and a half in May this year, to kind of sort of take the place of where WGE normally would be And it's maybe a little bit scaled back for now, but it still is going to like drop or waive membership dues and fees like that for any women participating in a PDGA event during those 2 weekends. And there are some other incentives to like get women interested and to sort of serve the same mission that Women's Global event did or does. But because that program might not have that bigger, flashy impact that Women's Global has, but we still want to prop it up, my team is really looking at like, okay, how do we get people to know about this? How do we get people excited about it? Even though it's not like the full on Women's Global thing, it can still be a really big impact for like women's disc golf and like growing women's memberships and things like that. Right. But now we don't have to say, okay, women's committee, put together graphics and make social posts and make this write up and stuff like that. Now they come to my team and say, hey, here's a couple bullet points. You guys figure out how to make this look good and promote this message. So that's something that we're ramping up right now. Because the paid staff has grown, we can sort of maybe alleviate a little bit of that workload from the committees. So again, that does still rely on like the committees being very motivated. You're right. And is there ways to like motivate them further? Probably. But you know, that's, again, it's ramping up and figuring out where to go from here.
That's awesome. Do you have any dates on that Women's Week or women's like 9 to 10 days?
I think it's May 19th to the 28th.
Okay, cool.
I don't know off the top of my head. If Jenny was here, Jenny Weigand, who's on my team, who's also on the women's committee, she would be like, yeah, it's right here. And how do you not know that? But she put together the graphic and got it posted and all that sort of stuff. So it's out there. It's out there now. And again, we're going to be ramping that up more and more and make sure people know. So, I'll add one more thing on that. So the technology team, paid staff, has been involved with that too, because they created like a little checkbox for TDs so that all they have to do if they want to participate in this like initiative is literally, it's just one click of the mouse to waive those fees for like non-membership fees for women that want to participate. So like that's all they have to do, right? It's not like fill out another form or do something, blah, 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 blah. It's like click and you're good. Button. So yeah. And then the event support team can answer questions about it. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of where we're ramping up right now. And I think we're on a pretty good path, but yeah, there's always room for improvement. We all know that. That's for sure.
That's cool.
Why is it so important to the PDJ to get new members?
Ooh, that's a good question. Look at the UDisc growth report. And I think this most recent one said something like there were 1.2 million disc golfers that, you know, used UDisc to keep track or whatever. And the PDJ membership kind of comprises historically like an 8 to 12% of like who are avid disc golfers like in the world, right? So it kind of looks like casual disc golfer. Then there's like the weekend warrior, not quite a PDGA member yet. And then there's like PDGA member. And if like you've made it all the way to PDGA member on that rung, it's like you're in, right? And then, you know, we think that those people that make it to that PDGA level of like involvement in the sport are maybe some of our most valuable advocates for growing the sport and really bringing in new people, volunteering, joining committees, maybe becoming part of staff later. Although, as I said earlier, like you don't have to be a member of the PDGA to be hired, like in the case of the graphic designer on my team. That kind of represents who should and could ultimately be like leaders in their community for promoting disc golf and just representing the community. So we try to add value to the membership and stuff like that. And maybe even if PDGA membership still only represents like 8 to 12% of who disc golfers are worldwide, as long as they keep, you know, being that shining example, I guess, for what, you know, what disc golf is, then that's a good thing. And there's lots of room in this world for like the casual disc golfer. I mean, that's huge. And that's how literally everyone gets started anyway. So that pool can continue to deepen as well.
This podcast is brought to you by Grip Equipment, the world's leading disc golf bag company. Since 2009, they've been at the forefront of creating the world's most comfortable, durable, and innovative bags on the market. Check out their wide variety of bags at grip-eq.com. If you need a backpack-style bag, you can swing on any one of Grip Equipment's models and immediately feel the back padding and shoulder strap comfort that will keep your mind on the course, not having to worry about your bag or your back. The bottom footrails and side panel construction work together to keep your bag upright to prevent leaning. The last thing that you want to do on the course is to have to clean up your entire disc selection that's just fallen into the mud. Join the thousands of disc golfers who have trusted Grip EQ bags for over a decade. Head over to grip-eq.com and take your game to the next level.
The money that the PDGA gets from the members, but then also, I know, correct me if I'm mistaken on this, but I'm pretty sure that the PDGA also receives money from each individual that signs up for a tournament any given weekend. That's correct? Like, depending on the tier of the tournament, that's correct?
Yeah, and there might be particulars depending on international registrations and things like that.
Okay.
And, like, dues for different countries are less, too. But
okay.
Yeah, for the most part, yeah.
So I wonder, did those two things, so the registration from the tournament and then the registration for becoming a member, do those two pools fill the same, like go into the same lump, or are those separated? Like, and what happens with that money? Like, what does it go towards?
I don't really have much to do with like the overall budget, you know, so I can't speak like super closely to that. Yeah, I believe things get pulled together and that helps, you know, empower the staff and finance the staff for the initiatives that we want to undertake. So like
the projects that y'all want to work on.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, the refreshed PDGA app, live scoring app, that is like really, really powerful and is a benefit to literally every single PDGA event because it's free for TDs and players to use that are at a PDGA sanctioned event. So like that's now a member benefit for, you know, 130,000 active members. And, you know, we're going to probably hit 10,000 events this year. So, you know, that's a valuable asset that some of that budget has gone to. The event support team is another really, really valuable asset that the PDGA has that those funds and fees help support. So the event support team is 6 people on that staff that basically answer any and every question that the that TDs might have.
Wow.
And
okay.
In fact, I have some statistics on this. This was one of the questions that I asked. So the event support team last year answered 13,000 tickets.
Wow.
On how to run an event. So yeah, and I mean, so you know, paying the salaries of those people to make sure that like these events continue to run smoothly. There were 8,933 events in 2022.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you think that's too many tournaments?
No, I don't think so, because I think that there's a lot of room for those events to like be dispersed worldwide. It is a lot. I mean, when I heard that number, I was like, whoa, blown away. And especially the answering the 13,000 questions about how to run.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah, with that, I mean, that was actually already a question that Joe and I were curious about. But now that point even makes me wonder that more, because one, you have 13,000 questions to answer. But two, I mean, like when you go to the PDGA and you click on event schedule and you go to any given weekend, you look down, there's like hundreds of tournaments per weekend. It's crazy. Yeah. And I wonder, the reason I was curious about that even before you said that was, if there's less tournaments available, you'll get more people at each tournament, and then those numbers might be more appealing to a Johnsonville Brat or a Barbasol. And it's like, not, hey, this tournament had 60 people. It's like, hey, if there was only one tournament in Illinois on May 5th weekend, you would have 400, 500 players. I guess that's something I'm curious about, if there's too many tournaments.
There's a lot of nuance to a response to that sort of statement. Because of the tier system, you know, there might only be one A tier, which could be like a DGPT silver event, for instance, at any given place, right? And it, I don't know what the radius is off the top of my head, but it is something like it's a few hundred miles that there can't be another A tier within zone. So although that's something that the event support team is evaluating and that kind of thing, I think that we can agree that it's sort of a double-edged sword, right? Having that much visibility is really, really good because it helps the like those sanctioning fees and stuff like that help support the proliferation of more events, which gets more people exposed. You know, those local C tiers are extremely valuable because there are a lot of opportunities for people to go in and say, hey, there's only 50 people here and I know most of them, they're my friends and they're not going to give me a hard time, you know, if I, you know, play poorly or whatever. You know, now the 13,000 questions that the event support team answered, like that's a lot. Like that's a lot of manpower dedicated to making events run well. The good thing is that the event support team is very good at answering those questions. And one thing that I'm working with the event support team on right now, Matthew and I, particularly the media manager on my team, we're trying to develop a program where we can educate TDs more ahead of time so that maybe some of those questions can be answered before they even need to be asked type of a thing, which is like, granted, something the PDJ maybe hasn't done a super duper great job of in the past. So, you know, we know what some of the weaknesses are and we're trying to cure them, you know, now, and we'll uncover more and we'll try to fix those. And that's just kind of like the way it rolls. But that's a very, very long way of saying, like, do I think it's too many events? Not really. It just depends on how efficient can we be and how sustainable can we be with like with the that.
Sustainability. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think we've hit like a level of instability, but if we as the PDGA don't do more to educate TDs and help them identify volunteers and sponsors and learn how to run their events, then yeah, we might hit an unsustainable tipping point, you know, sooner rather than later, but we're working hard to make sure that we don't do that. So that's a big part of what we do.
Yeah, no, that's a huge part, I'm sure. I was also just wondering, just for the people who might be PDGA members and they wanted to get onto a committee team or get onto a committee for the PDGA, maybe we should just talk about like how would they go about doing that?
Sure. So it kind of depends on the committee. We'll use the women's committee again as an example because I'm really close to the women's committee because Jenny on my team is a part of that. So I hear about it a lot. And one of the things that they launched recently was like fill out a form and basically apply to be on the women's committee. And I don't have any statistics on how many responses they've had yet or anything like that, or what that, how smoothly that process is going. But I think that's a really good step in like the right direction as far as making it easy to solicit participation and, you know, hey, I'm interested, you know, what do I do? In that example, it's like, just click this thing, fill it out, and that's good. In the case of most of the other committees, as of right now, the answer that I got was like, hey, just reach out to the chair of that committee, which is published on that page for the PDJ committees. You can go see who all the chairs are. And then just kind of say, hey, I'm interested in this committee and volunteering to see what I can add to, you know, to what you're working on. And that's kind of like the way it works right now. So I have a feeling when the women's committee has a lot of success with their application form that that might get leveraged elsewhere as well. And it'll help like just make the process more objective too. And like all this sort of stuff and less like, oh, I just took the initiative to email so-and-so that's the chair of this committee. And more like, okay, well, I applied to it kind of like a job, even though it's currently unpaid, but I mean, that might be the path forward. We'll see how that ramps up too.
There's nothing that like the PDGA, as a member of the PDGA, you don't vote for who goes onto the committee. I know you vote for your state representative and stuff like that, new board members, but you don't vote for any committees. It's more just like you reach out to them and you say, hey, I'm interested.
Yeah, I think that's as simple as it is right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can we get a little bit into some specific committees? Because there's some questions that I've been super curious about, especially, you know, you want to know about the unknown. People don't know what's down in the ocean, so you got to go scuba dive, right? And like, I feel like that's true for everything. Curiosity is just like something natural for us as humans. And especially when you say that the disciplinary committee is a secret, and that makes sense to me why it is secretive, but I think there should be a published guideline of what a specific action results in. Is there any plans of getting something like that out to the public so a player can weigh the pro and con of punching someone or of dropping an F-bomb or stuff like that, right? Where you know, hey, if I drive drunk, I'm getting my license taken away. Or, you know, I think that that would be beneficial, but I'm curious as a staff member if there's any internal conversations going on about that stuff and if you can share any of it with us.
Right, yeah. So the disciplinary committee, that's one where you'll only see the chair listed on that page. And I think a lot of that is to, you know, protect those volunteer members from, you know, undue harassment. Like, let's say a popular player receives a suspension, you know, is it appropriate for the members of that committee to be known to the public and then open to harassment? Probably not, but I guess at least that chair can deal with it. So then as far as like what types of actions might warrant what type of consequence, firstly, I would say, just as a general point of practice, don't punch that player, just regardless of how big of a jerk they've been. That's just kind of like my, you know, my thought here.
Standard,
but, you know,
yeah.
Naturally, you would think that, but you also don't think a tennis player is going to just slam their racket down. But I'm sure that it's a known thing to that tennis player. If you break a racket, your fine is blank. And I was on when I was on Team Prodigy, we were part owners and decision makers. And one of our topics was, hey, we are going to form a code of conduct for ourselves and come up with penalties accordingly. And it was a known thing to all of us. So we, you know, in the moment, talk ourselves down and be like, oh, wait, don't break that tennis racket. Don't, you know, punch that tree, whatever it may be.
Okay. So as far as like, what is like the official PDGA policy on this? So it is spelled out in pretty explicit detail, and like what the method is for like filing a complaint or appealing or anything like that. You basically just Google PDGA, you know, disciplinary process. There's a lot there, and to sort of distill it into a podcast answer, there are like different classes of offenses, that the most severe of which would be physical violence or like threats and things like that, all the way down to the more, or like the less significant ones, like, gosh, I can't think of one off the top of my head, but you know, it might be something like
trying to tank your player rating or something like
that. That's a good example, I bet. So, you know, like pencil whipping is not as severe as, you know, like faking your score is not as severe as physical violence, but could still warrant potentially at least probation or whatever, or a suspension, depending on, you know, maybe how many times you've done it or whatever. And so that kind of stuff is outlined in there.
Okay.
But like, as far as just kind of anticipating the next question is like, okay, how do we know, you know, this person committed an action that falls under this class of violation. So I think class A is like the worst one, like violence at an event, right? How does that disciplinary committee determine where in that range of sentencing, for lack of a better word, does their, you know, punishment lie, right? Kind of like how a judge in a court might say, yeah, the range is according to the law, is like 5 to 10 years in jail or whatever, in prison or whatever. So it's would be kind of a similar process. It's like weighing, you know, number of offenses or the repeater, that kind of thing, and whatever else that the DC, the disciplinary committee might, you know, assess there. So it does follow like a pretty logical process. But as someone who doesn't sit on the disciplinary committee, that's kind of like my best understanding there. And I guess if you want to be a part of that committee, you can message Jared and see if you want to be on there too. But there is a lot of information on the PDJ website about, you know, the disciplinary process and the sanctions that might be, you know, levied against a player for a violation, that kind of thing.
It's funny because I've been a PDJ member, I maybe like 12 to 15 years now or something like that. And like some of this stuff that you're telling me and the documents that you say we can find, I had no idea. So like, yeah. I'm very happy to have spoken with you about this and got this information. And now I can go read it myself and kind of dive deeper. Another idea I got for you, Danny, I think maybe like as people become new members, maybe you guys could send those links in an email form or something like that. Sure. Like kind of how you guys have been doing when a new rule comes out, sending an email with, hey, this new rule came out, here's how it works. Sometimes it's hard to find information, especially on PDJ.com, which has so much buried in the archives.
Well, and that's what I alluded to earlier about like the PDJ website getting that refresh as well. Originally, we were trying to target doing the new branding and the website at the same time, but the folks working on the website are like, hey, let's not rush this. Let's get this out, you know, and do it once, right?
Which
that's like sort of one of my mottos, so I super support it. Jenny Weigand, who obviously is an MVP because I've said her name like 16 times.
Yeah, so far. Awesome.
But one of the things that she's particularly experienced with and takes really seriously with this project is kind of like the road mapping for the website so that it's maybe a little bit more intuitive. I'm like, okay, I have this question. How do I find this information in an easy, like less of a, I have to type in a search query sort of a way. Mm-hmm. Which does work pretty well, but more of a like, here's a set of menu options and how do I navigate in a few clicks to get to what I'm after. So what you're saying, Paige, makes a lot of sense. Like there's a lot of information.
Yeah.
It's very deep, but we got the best people on it. And but you know, it's like, how do you eat an elephant? It's like one bite at a time. And so that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
They're just kind of getting their teeth sunk into this elephant that is the PDJ website. It is
that's great.
Immense.
That's great. I really appreciate, and it's, and that's like a reason I'm so thankful to have this opportunity to chat with you, because we don't get to see the things you're working on until it's here. It is, you know, here's the rebrand.
Right.
Oh, didn't even know you guys were going through a rebrand, you know, didn't know that all of these things were happening. So it's really cool to get to speak with you. One more specific on the committee. I would say a couple months now ago, there was a document that came out through the PDJ about transgender athletes in the PDJ. And I'm curious what committee that falls under. I know that the health committee has something to do with that because they're checking levels and making sure we're along the same lines as like the Olympic. Is that all correct? Can you give us some insight and who makes... Yeah, what committee is talking about that?
I can provide a little bit more clarity there with regard of like kind of who came to like that ultimate conclusion, right? And so the board of directors, the PDJ Global Board of Directors, were the like sole voters on this topic. So the PDJ released a official statement on this topic, and that's where I would say definitely go and take a look at that because it's thorough and has all the information there. But just to sort of summarize, the board of directors made that decision based on their vote, but they were presented with some research and opinions and things like that, and you know, science-based opinions, I should say, like in a report that was like presented to them at a board summit. Well, before them, because they had the opportunity to read the paper, right? Before they had the summit and the vote and all that. So some of that came from the medical committee. Some of that came from a subcommittee that the PDJ medical committee propped up, where they solicited participation from, you know, medical professionals and stuff like that, particularly endocrinologists and people that would be close to that topic and kind of have some professional and, you know, clinical experience with at least research based experience. That medical subcommittee put together their findings and delivered that to the board. And that was one of the things that the board considered, not the only thing that the board considered, but one of the items that the board considered when they made their vote.
So the board votes on it, but the committees bring them the information that they need to.
So the committee, that subcommittee, I really should say, presented a paper that said, you know, here it is, along with some survey data and some other stuff. Those were parts of like a greater puzzle that the, you know, the board put together. Basically, there were other things like personal statements, you know, both for inclusion and for what was labeled fairness in as kind of like labeling the two sides of the debate, you know, personal testimonies and things like that as well.
Yeah, like in that form that you guys emailed out that we as members kind of gave our feedback. Is that what you're referring to?
Well, that was part of the survey data, but no, I'm talking just then I was kind of referring more to individuals presenting their personal testimony on the topic.
Okay.
And I also was not in the room for all of that, particularly the personal testimony part. But yeah, and again, that's just like a small thing. And hey, look, I'll go ahead and say it right now that, you know, the PDJ staff had an opportunity to make statement to the board. Basically, the directors did. So people like myself, and I did give a statement to the board. And I'll go ahead and say that my statement was advocating for patients and inclusion while we dive deeper into this topic, because it's extremely sensitive and there's a lot to it. And, you know, the board weighed everything and they made the decision that they made. And it's now my job as part of the staff to carry out what the board directs us to do. And that's fine. So there, again, there was a lot to it that the board considered. And that's kind of like the big picture of how that kind of shook out.
Thank you for your honesty and in your stance and all of that, Danny. And I'm just wondering from like a future forward thinking mindset, but is that a permanent decision or is that something that do you think it will change in the future, or what are your thoughts on that?
No policy or rule is permanent. Well, cheating is probably going to forever be banned, right?
I hope so.
Like pencil whipping off the table, the punching other players probably is going to continue to be banned. But in the PDGA statement on this topic, it sums up at the end kind of saying, like, you know, this policy will be reviewed. It'll probably come down to emerging science being kind of like the tip of the spear for those reviews. The thing is that regardless of which side of the topic that you might land on, I believe that there should be recognition that, you know, there's just not like a ton of clinical data. And so that means that advocates for that fairness side need to recognize that, hey, there might be something that comes out later that says, oh, hey, you know, there should be inclusion regardless. Mm-hmm. Or maybe the inclusion people should say there is a chance that a study could come out in the future that says absolutely unequivocally that there is an advantage or whatever here. And, you know, I just think that, and this is really just me kind of personally weighing in here, that like everyone needs to try to exercise like patience and empathy throughout this process, because like we're talking about real people here.
Absolutely.
And the PDGA stance is that, yeah, this is a topic that is up for review. Absolutely. Because we don't know what we don't know yet. But for, you know, the time being, that, you know, that the vote that the board had is the vote. So that's kind of where it lands. Yeah, it's a tough topic, though. And I really empathize with the people that are affected by it. You know, and again, this is like on both sides. It's like I could see frustration for both people or both sets of people, because it's like your perspective is, you know, is valuable and shouldn't be like downplayed, because like your personal experience in your life is like important, and you know, everyone should just kind of maybe take time to like listen and try to empathize and be a little slower to like finger pointing and blame mm-hmm. and like accusations and stuff.
Yeah,
you know, we are where we are right now, and hopefully we can figure out like as a community like ways to like continue to progress, whatever that might look like.
So if Joe and I or anyone listening wants to reach out about, and not just the transgender topic, but you know, the disciplinary committee, the marketing, the anything, where should people send these inquiries, concerns, questions? I know that you just said that you had people give their personal statements. Who do we give that to if we want to share?
I would say the first place to go is find that committee's page. So you could Google PDGA committees and that'll get you there. And then you'll see how to contact the chairperson.
The chairperson for that committee? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that would be a good start. Or the event support team that is on staff at the PDGA is also extremely responsive. And so like if they get a question that isn't like directly related to an event, you know, they're careful to like make sure that it gets to, you know, whoever's the appropriate person to answer that question or whatever.
Yeah. Cool. Can you just answer like one parting thing on the transgender topic? Is there still conversations going on in the PDGA, or once that document went out, was that kind of like, okay, that's the decision, moving on? Is it still something that's talked about internally?
So with regard to the staff, yeah, I mean, we talk about it and we talk about like our opinions on the topic and stuff like that. We're not currently tasked with any actionable items, which would have come from the board of directors. Now, what the board of directors discuss on this topic in their meetings would either be reflected in the board minutes, which are available online.
Oh, okay.
Or they might be conducted in executive session, which means that there are some sort of private details that they're not either legally allowed to or comfortable like disclosing. First of all, knowing how close the vote on this topic was and the individuals that comprise the board, I know that this is still like a important topic for
awesome.
At least for those individuals and the board. But you know, what type of discussions are they doing at those meetings? It's either in those notes or whatever. I don't attend the meetings, so I don't really know. But again, I think that this is a really big topic, and it's not something that should just now be neglected because mm-hmm. there was a decision made once. The board recognizes that like there is an evolution of information here that will continue to be evaluated, and we'll just see where things go. Yeah.
Awesome. Just to wrap it up for our listeners, it's obvious that the PDGA is growing in staff. You said there used to be less than 10 staff members mm-hmm. and now there's upwards of 30. And, you know, there's, what'd you say, 50 committee members and countless volunteers. So, yeah, if you could just kind of tell our listeners, like, what they would be getting into working with the PDGA or working with the for the PDGA or with the PDGA, and what skill set they would need other than just a passion for growing the sport.
As far as like getting involved with volunteering with the PDGA, like I mentioned earlier, reaching out to those committees that you might be interested in and seeing if you can serve. You know, another way that you can make a really big impact is submitting a bid to host a major. If you're really, really passionate about junior disc golf or women's disc golf, you have a chance to submit a bid to run the best junior worlds ever or to run the best US women's ever. You know, those are ways that you can like elevate those initiatives. We're a membership organization, so we take member feedback extremely seriously. So if you have feedback there are ways to reach out to the BDGA, like I said, through that event support team or through those committee chairs who, if they can't formulate an answer that they're satisfied with, you know, they can get that to the staff member that is most appropriate. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ways to do it. And yeah, just kind of reaching out and letting us serve the members is probably the easiest and best way. So don't be afraid to say, hey, I mean, people do it anyway. So we've heard a lot of it as it is, and we'll continue to hear more and keep serving the members. So yeah, we're here to help. That's what we're here for.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Danny, for coming on and sharing your insight with the PDGA and what you do for the PDGA. We really, really appreciate having you on, and we will see you later. Thanks again. Yeah.
Thanks for having me, folks. It was a pleasure.
Bye, Danny. See you out on the tour.
See ya.
Oh my goodness, Paige. Like, Danny, wow. I just super appreciated Danny's honesty on, honestly, everything that we chatted about. But one thing that stuck out to me was the quote that he said there. He said, exercise patience and empathy. We're talking about real people here. What did you think about that?
I loved it. And, you know, I stressed it in the episode, but I want to re-stress it because you could feel his emotions just looking at him. And I hope you guys could hear that, you know, in the audio. But he was so passionate about everything he was talking about, whether that was a hard topic or it was something he was excited about. He just really exuded like passion for the game. And I think that having people like that working for the PDJ is what is going to continue to grow the professional side of the sport. I very much appreciated his openness, but also just all the information that he shared with us.
Yeah, he was a wealth of knowledge. Like, oh my goodness, 50 committee members, and there's 13 committees. And honestly, I didn't even know that I could just kind of apply to be on one of these committees and one of those things.
Absolutely. It's super cool. And, you know, that's like what a lot of our previous episodes have been about is like, how do I get involved if I'm listening and I'm excited about this sport? How can I get involved with a particular company or, in this case, organization, nonprofit organization? But I think this episode was the first of its kind on our podcast as far as also kind of like giving us almost some homework as members. And if we are curious about what goes on, clicking all these links, and we're going to drop them all below so you guys can check out, you know, one, how to send them feedback and concerns, questions, your thoughts, but also how to look into all these committees and see what their mission statement is. I feel like I have a lot of homework to do.
Yeah,
and
same here.
Not have to, but you know, I'm curious and like, what are they talking about and making decisions on that we don't know about? It was cool to hear him start that, but there's so much more that we couldn't cover in that hour talking with him.
Yeah, and if you are a fan of that rebrand that Danny was talking about as well, make sure you let them know and give them feedback on those good things too that they're doing, because there are a lot of changes happening right now.
Yeah, it was cool to hear them saying that they are interested in like all of those ideas that I thought I had that were like, why don't you try this? That they're already, you know, trying to get those in the works. And, you know, it takes an army. And I think that is apparent that they're willing to grow that army, and they know that, and they're trying to get more people working for them and with them. 130,000 active members to sort through, what did he say, like 15,000 like questions and comments from TDs last year. So they got their work cut out for them. I really do hope that they continue to grow financially so that they can hire more staff, because I think if they just had somebody in a position where they reached out to companies to get those billboards and to get those commercials, I really think that that could be such a huge visible change for us for people to start seeing commercials on their television that there's a tournament nearby and that, hey, you could become a professional disc golfer and make more money than you thought was even possible in you know, quote unquote, frolf. You know, people don't think it's like a true sport. You know, some people roll their eyes at it. So I think that that's something that could be really pivotal in changing the perspective that some people have on our sport. But yeah, I was very happy with the way this episode went and just all of the information that he gave us. What goes on at the PDJ that we don't know about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and his team sounds like they work so hard too, and it was cool to have a little bit of insight into what all of their roles are. Makes me kind of want to be a part of that team, honestly. Yeah, no, it's pretty cool stuff. I think he's doing an awesome job, and it's really cool to see, yeah, the website rebrand, and also just getting that information in a little bit of a more convenient space for us to click on. Yeah,
I'm curious to see the new, not only the new branding, but how the new website does flow. And when I do log off of here and we sign off here in a couple minutes, that I'm going to go on the website and see, is it easy to access as he says? And can I find that information quickly? I hope you guys do the same and educate yourself on what's going on inside the sport in the decision making. And thank you guys so much for tuning in for another episode. If you have any questions, comments, feedback, ideas for us, shoot them at us, as always, approachable@jomezpro.com.
Thanks for tuning into Approachable, presented by Grip Equipment and powered by Jomez Pro.